Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, y'all, welcome back to a Sunday, June 4th, 2023 edition here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, Chase Thomas Podcast Network, which means it's Sunday. Atlanta Sports Guys, fellow Atlanta Sports Guys, 92.9 The Game, and 247 Sports, Garrett Chapman, along with Max Markovich, to talk all things Atlanta sports and the biggest stories this week with the Falcons, Braves, and Hawks here on the program. On today's show, we talked about the weakest roster position right now, heading into Summer Bowl here for the Falcons, whether that's linebacker, edge, corner. We debated and had a really fun conversation on that. If Kyler Murray is going to be a Falcon in the next 6 months or so, why that's potentially a possibility. Arthur Smith needing to win the division, or at least win 9 or 10 games, based on how things have kind of shaken out here this offseason, and what the Falcons have invested in a lot of different areas, and just, again, what the NFC South looks like. So talk about that, Falcons schedule, and then start our Do They Stay or Do They Go series with Trae Young, and what his trade value is at the moment, what a trade would look like, what would that mean for the franchise, how did he and DeJounte Murray work this season, the impact of Quinn Snyder coming in late, and new GMs, so not the guys who drafted Trae and Landry Fields running the show here. So a lot of fun talking all things Falcons and Hawks on this edition of the Atlanta Sports Guys. So hope you guys enjoy that here on this Sunday edition of the program. As always, if you are a first-time listener, first off, thank you for checking out the program, and make sure that you hit that subscribe button on your preferred podcast player so you never miss an episode. New episodes every single day here on this very show, Sports Renaissance Man. That's me talking all things national sports, Tennessee, Atlanta, Nashville Predators, all that kind of stuff each and every day here on this program. So make sure you're subscribed and never miss an episode. Also, if you're already subscribed, thanks. And also hit that pause button right now and leave this show a 5-star rating and a review on your preferred podcast player. But if it's Apple or Spotify, very important with helping the show continue to grow and helping other people find the show. So if you could take a second to make that happen today, I would greatly appreciate it. As always, you can watch this very show and this episode, clips, shorts, all that good stuff. A lot of fun content on the visual aspect of it over on YouTube, youtube.com/ChaseThomas Podcast. Like and subscribe right there at 1,000 now. So closing in. So I appreciate y'all's support there. As always, you can email us with any Atlanta sports questions you have for Garrett or Max or myself for next week's show. Email us, ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com, or tweet at us at @PodChaseThomas. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back to the Atlanta Sports Guys here on the Chase Thomas Podcast. The whole gang is back together. late this afternoon. We've got 99 The Game and 24/7 Sports. Garrett Chapman. Garrett, good evening, sir. How are you?
Fantastic, man. Big weekend ahead. Lots going on. Having fun.
Are you out on the flats doing covering practice too?
Yeah, so I'll be doing a lot of the Georgia Tech stuff, okay. And they have their first official visit this weekend. So,
what's the summer, SPF so that you're rocking? Really are you busy on SPF 50 when you're out? Like, are you covering? Like, how are you making sure that there's no sunburn action going on?
Yeah, the SPF 50 is pretty invaluable tool. Mm-hmm. It lives in my car. It has like a certain spot, yeah, like right there. It can't get too hot, so you got to have it in like the dashboard and everything. So.
I even have my neck gaiter when I'm in the car, just in case. Like my fishing neck gaiter, if I'm like going for like, I'll just throw that bad boy on in my mid-lunch walk if I don't feel like putting on sunscreen and smelling like sunscreen, because I'm an SPF 50 guy. Max, you're kind of fair skin too. Are you a big SPF 50 guy?
I tan pretty well.
Do you? Okay.
I'll be on the golf course this weekend, and that if I don't wear sunscreen, I'll get a mean farmer's tan. Mm. And if I don't reapply, I could get iffy, so...
So I got a little bit of a tan, like right here, just a bit. It's just, right. I was up golfing. I golfed three times last weekend.
Max, are we going to give him that? A record. Like, he just showed more white. That was not a tan. What was I looking at?
It's a Garrett tan. All right.
I want to know what Garrett's handicap different. Is.
Oh,
my handicap? I have no idea. I've been playing a lot of 9-hole courses, and it would have extrapolated. If you extrapolate my score, I'd have like, I think my best would have been like an 85, 84.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm not awful. I'm not good.
What's yours, Max?
I'm like a 6-7.
Oh.
So you're pretty good.
I dabble.
Yeah.
Are you playing every weekend now?
No, like twice a month, maybe. Okay. If I can do more, I would like to, but not really.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, that guy down there, you heard, on the screen here on youtube.com/ChaseThomas podcast is Max Markovich, also here. Max, good evening, sir. How are you
doing? Fantastic. Can't wait to get back at it. I've been scouring Twitter today for clips of the every Desmond Ridder throw, every Bijan Robinson route. They had an open practice today at at the Benz. Mm-hmm. Does not seem like Garrett was there, which is unfortunate.
I wish I could have.
I'm fiending for some Falcons football already. It is too early.
He's fiending. Well, speaking of the Falcons, we can start here. I have this question for you guys, and I'm interested to see where you land here, because the early returns on the roster, across the board, a lot of folks don't like this Falcons roster right now. That a lot of upgrades, a lot of signings, but we'll get into a particular ESPN NFL writer who had a really interesting piece on where the Falcons are at, and especially the defensive signings and the Mike Hughes, Jeff Okudas, Anyamadas, guys like that, Lorenzo Carter, just different guys that we'll get into. But I'm curious, we kind of know where the strengths are. Maybe we can do that next week. But Garrett, when you look at the Falcons' current roster and rotation that they're looking at here going into 2023, what do you think is the biggest positional weakness on this team right now? Where do you think the position is?
I guess you could probably say linebacker, but I'm also expecting a pretty seismic leap from Troy Andersen in year two. Mm. I think the Falcons are too. And you can see it just by evidence of a lot of their decisions that they made over the offseason. They didn't go re-sign like a Rashawn Evans or go get a big player or something like that. Somebody can go in and be a cleanup guy, but I think he's on the roster, and that's Troy Andersen. I think he's going to have a big year this year. So it's more just lack of production and expectations and hopes more so than proven. Guys haven't proven it on the field. Like Arnold Ebikadie is like another one of those guys. They're expecting him to be like a 10 sack guy, but we haven't seen it. So we can't really expect it yet. Even though I definitely am. So it's just experience. I mean, like once they get like a lot of these younger guys up and running, I think they're going to be a better football team. But, I think they've done a pretty good job at addressing a lot of their needs. It's just that they've got a lot of positionless football players, especially on offense. And it's hard to really look and point out one specific room, like on offense specifically, where you're weak, because all of these guys can play every position on the field, it seems like.
That's interesting. I was not expecting you to go to a linebacker. I wasn't expecting that. Max, me do you either. Go linebacker as well, or where do you go?
To me, it's clearly Edge. I guess that kind of folds into linebacker. There were two that came to mind. Edge is the first because I think it's the most pressing. I agree with you about Ebiketie and to a lesser extent, D'Angelo Malone. But I forget who it was, but I saw someone sort of like rank out all of the edge rooms in on Twitter, like rank out all the edge rooms in the NFL. And when you really compare what the Falcons have in that room, even, you know, even with some projection, it's a bottom third NFL edge room pretty comfortably. I don't know that I'm not worried about it. I mean, worried is a word. Like, they've had the worst pass rush in the league for how long now? Like, anything is going to be an improvement, and I think they're going to generate a lot more pass rush from the interior, which will open up possibilities for the edge guys. But we're going on since Sean Abraham left that you're looking for a dominant edge guy, right? And it'll come at some point, but I don't think they're on the roster right now. The other one that came to mind, and I've been thinking about this a little more, and I think it's a much less pressing need, but the receiver room is not great. I fully expect Drake London to be a number one wide receiver in the NFL probably as soon as this year. After that, you're looking at a lot of sort of like Mac Hollins, Scotty Miller. And I understand the reason I say it's a much less pressing need is, like, I understand that the counter to that is Kyle Pitts is going to split out wide a ton. Cordarrelle Patterson is going to have reps everywhere on the field. Bijan Robinson will have reps in the slot. Like, receiver, Jonnu Smith, they brought him in, he'll do all sorts of things. Receiver is a less important position in this offense than it is for a lot of offenses in the NFL, so I'm not as worried about it. But what made me think of that is, like, if Drake London got hurt, you know, God forbid, like, what is that room? What does that room become? And I think that is... Those are the two I sort of flock to, because I think you're right. They plugged a lot of holes this offseason. They really added a ton of bodies, especially on defense, where you would have said these are the clear weaknesses. But they had one of the worst rosters in the league last year, and I think that's important to admit. Like, even where they made significant improvements, that it could be a below average unit in the league and still have improved. Yeah, I don't know, Chase. What do you think?
I'm surprised neither of y'all said corner, because I think the corner room still stinks. And this is something that, like, AJ Terrell masks a lot of this. And it kind of builds off what they did this offseason, right? Where, to y'all's point about linebackers and edge, I'm not as worried about linebacker just because I think it's the least important position on defense. Generally speaking, you're going to only go two guys. And it's just, I don't know. We're mostly primarily in the nickel just era of the NFL, where it's just, you're going to have more secondary guys than linebackers. It's just usually how it's going to work on the field. Yeah. I would just look at, kind of building off the issues with the pass rush. If the pass rush is bad again, and Calais Campbell doesn't make a big jump, or it doesn't just keep his same production that he's had over almost 20 years in the NFL, if Bud Dupree doesn't have anything left in the tank, if Lorenzo Carter really gives you nothing on the outside, you could see how this gets ugly in a hurry. I mean, you need Taquan Graham to take the next step. That's a big one. And he showed flashes last year. But this secondary, specifically corner, I would feel a lot more comfortable with the gambles on the Mike Hughes and Jeff Okudas if there was a strong pass rush. If you had guys that I was pretty certain would get home, that they would be a team that got after the quarterback at an elite rate, where it's like, yeah, I don't trust a lot of these guys in the back end, but they won't be asked to do as much. I think these guys are going to be asked to do a lot. AJ Terrell's been on an island and covers up a lot of weaknesses, but you're gambling on Jeff Okudah figuring it out, who has only been bad in the NFL. You're gambling on, guys like Trey Flowers working out here. Mike Hughes, who, again, has really only been bad in the NFL. So you have two really just guys who come into starting spots in the secondary who have only been bad. And that's not to say they will not be bad, but when you're thinking at the offseason of, like, the hit rate for these kind of signings, it's pretty low, generally speaking. And if you get one or two to hit, then great. Then it worked out. You replace Casey Hayward, this, that, and the other. I just look at this where I'm like, this is pretty weak. And having to bring back Cornell Armstrong because you need bodies at corner, and he was just atrocious last year, look, I love Jesse Bates and Richie Grant. I think they're going to be great at the safety spots. I just think corner is more valuable in this league. And I think the Falcons have really put a lot of faith in these one-year gamble on these high upside younger corners who've never really shown it at the NFL level. So in a passing league with a team that is going to struggle to get home and cause problems for elite quarterbacks on their schedule, I just could see a scenario where this secondary gets torched more often than not. So that scares me.
I get that argument for sure. I think in sort of thinking about this through in my head, the Falcons probably had one of the two or three worst defensive rosters in the league last year.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty much indisputable. You pick your spots where you can upgrade, and you know, you pick a lot of spots, but you can't suddenly make every unit above average. Yep. I think the corner room is probably a below average in the NFL room. But I to me, it like comes down to the big gamble in that room is Okuda. I don't think between Hughes and Clark Phillips and Darren Hall, like they're going to get serviceable reps from nickel.
Mm.
The gamble is like Okuda needs to become an average, best case scenario, above average outside corner. And I think that's what they're really banking on in that corner room. But the safety room to me and the interior of the defensive line are like now two legitimately above average units in the NFL. I think Richie Grant and Jesse Bates is an above average NFL safety tandem. I think between Grady Jarrett, David Onyemata, Calais Campbell, Taquan Graham, if Eddie Goldman exists, that's like a legitimately deep and good interior, the likes of which we haven't seen in a while. And so you can only do so many things. I don't think there were very many good edges available this offseason at all. So I don't really fault anything they did there. The thing with corners, like they could have taken one at eight, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're playing for need, that's a bigger need than running back in a million years. They didn't. They took Bijan, and so we have to sort of have this conversation, and that's...
Do your Christian Gonzalez piece. I need a soundbite for this part. Do your Christian Gonzalez piece.
I'm
not even
like, I mean, I'm so excited to watch this offense that I'm not even mad about betting on Okuda for a throwaway pick versus like the excitement we're going to see offensively. But when you're talking about value, like when you're talking about the Bijan pick in the context of value, this is the kind of thing you're talking about. That corner room is a question mark. I think there's a world in which it becomes like a really solid unit. I think there's also a world where, you know, if you're talking injuries too, like if AJ Terrell went down, you're in a world of hurt. And that's where the depth isn't there yet.
I mean, AJ Terrell goes down, teams may never run on the Falcons again. Like they're just only passing. Like you're going 40. Like,
I mean, when we're talking about the most important players on the entire team this year, like he might be number one.
That's a good point.
Like guys you could least afford to lose, he might be the number one.
Do you either him or like Jake Matthews?
Yeah, Jake Matthews would be a terrible loss. Just because you don't really have much of a swing tackle at that point. But no, I think the one thing that they have, we don't have a killer necessarily on defense outside of like maybe Grady Jarrett, as far as like additions go, I should say. But like Arthur Smith said in like, I was like, he was on some podcast. I think it was like the Green Light podcast with Chris Long. He said effectively the one thing that they have this year that they haven't had in any past year, at least since he's been here, is depth. Like TQ, I love TQ, Taquan Graham. He's not a starting defensive tackle or defensive end. It's just, it shouldn't be a role that he's in, but that was a role that he was thrust into for multiple weeks out of the year. But if he's coming off of the bench, I think that's a splendid role for him where he continues to develop. And Eddie Goldman, like you mentioned, he's another one of those guys. I mean, I think this defense has a chance to be an above average group. I think a lot of that also has to do with a new defensive coordinator coming in. What is Ryan Nielsen going to look like? Like, what is his defense going to look like under Ryan Nielsen? Because we're losing a very good defensive coordinator in Dean Pease. I mean, for all of the lumps that he took with critics or whatever, he was a really good DC and he was a good play caller and he was able to adjust his defenses very effectively, especially considering the amount of talent that he had. Nielsen, of course, is a new guy and we'll see what happens. He's a first time like sole play caller. He was a co-defensive coordinator over there in New Orleans. So I think that's a decent question mark to think about looking ahead to this season. But as far as corner goes, I think Clark Phillips too is going to be a stud. I think he's the steal of the draft, at least for the Falcons. And I'm really excited to see what he can do. I mean, if he's an inch or two taller, he's a first round pick. Like, he could be going in the top 15, but he's not, and he'll be perfect in the nickel. And if they're in a pinch, I think they could stick him out wide. Dude was a Jim Thorpe finalist, and he was a stud at Utah. He was really good. And I'm really excited to see what he can do for that room, especially if he's thrust into duty, which I expect he will at some point. Just because, like you said, like this unit is thin, but as part of this team just not drafting well over the last 5 years or so, 6 years. It's what happens when you draft a group in 2017 and not a single one of those guys makes it to year four. It's embarrassing. So like this team was just gutted for talent, and it's something that you feel for multiple years down the road, and it's not something that's going to be fixed in one off season. But I will say Terry Fontenot did a fantastic job of finding bridge guys and continuing to find guys who fit the culture and everything else, according to all these quotes that are coming out from the team. He's done that. And I think that Arthur Smith has got his dudes. And Rome wasn't built in a day, you know, so it wasn't going to be fixed overnight. But I think that this could be maybe in like that low 20s, low 20s, high teens, maybe as far as production goes, because on the flip side, you have a really, really potent rushing attack and they're going to hold the ball for long periods of time. And that's the best friend of a defense is a good offense that holds the football. And that's what the Falcons will do better than damn near anybody in the NFL next year.
If they're in the mid to high teens as a defense, you can start printing playoff tickets.
Yeah.
I think that's, I mean, you know, if they're again,
that's, high mid, end, that's really, really
right.
High
if they're end. A mid 20s defense, a low 20s defense, like, I think that's what's going to hold them back. But like, I pretty much have no, it's going to be an above average offense. I feel confident in saying that. Even if Desmond Ridder is average, I think they're going to be an above average offense. And so it comes down to that. It comes down to not having key injuries. It comes down to like, what is Ryan Nielsen as a coordinator? And how do these additions kind of work out? But I mean, we're talking about corner and edge. Like, those are two of the premium positions in the NFL. Yeah. And if you're asking me what my main worry about this roster is, it's right there.
Can I put on my conspiracy theory hat?
Go for it.
It's your favorite thing, man.
It's one of my favorite things. I was listening to Jeff Schwartz on Barnwell's podcast this week, and he said that, and he's maintained this, that Kyler Murray's already played his last down for the Cardinals, that the Cardinals are going all in on being the worst team in football, eating the DeAndre money. Like, they are completely blowing this thing up. He's not going to play football again for the Cardinals. The Falcons, he talked about, where it was like Barnwell wrote in the piece that we can talk about. It's a little curious that they didn't bring in any competition. Shots fired at Taylor Heinicke, local legend, Collins Hill legend. But it was a little weird. It's like, okay, you're really like, this is, there's no real competition here. Like, this is Desmond's job. This is his opportunity. We're going to put our team through. Like, we're going to run the piss out of the ball. So we're not worried about that right now. I think he could have that mindset and want to see what Dez is. But I am going to hold out the belief, and I'm just sticking to this on June 2nd, Kyler Murray is an Atlanta Falcon before the 2024 season, I think, or the calendar turns to 2024. I don't think
it's this, a big difference. I think, so you're saying before 2024, the year, not
I think it's
next season.
The Falcons are working towards, if they are playing 500 football at when Kyler's healthy, and the Cardinals are like, all right, like, Kyler's
you're
not coming back.
Quarterback midseason.
No.
You're not,
and also,
but not a guy, he's like, not like what? He's playing midseason.
What about,
here's the difference.
What about Kyler Murray possibly makes you think he'd be an Arthur Smith guy?
I don't see any of that.
He'd be smaller than basically everyone on the offense, for one. Second of all, like, he seems like a bit of a malcontent. Those are kind of the two things that Arthur Smith's like, no, my quarterback's going to have size and he's going to be a team first guy.
Carson Palmer was traded midseason to the.
I think if it's a midseason trade, it's Ryan Tannehill. Like, I don't think so.
I think it's Kyler. And what I've learned from Terry Fontenot is that man is going to go BPA. And he's going to look at it as just like the Bijan, the Kyler, and we're just going to put as many dudes where it's like, can you imagine defending some of the open space stuff with Bijan and Kyler? Kyler's
why didn't the they go for Lamar? If that's like, I mean, like, that's,
I think it was contract money. Like, Kyler's already locked in, and Kyler wasn't healthy. I'm like he's not playing for the first half of the year.
It's not going to happen, but it's fun to discuss.
Mark it down. June 2nd, Kyler Murray will be an Atlanta Falcon. He will be the next franchise quarterback.
If this happens, then you can clip this, and that'll be sick for you. it ain't happening. I mean, like, I think if like this roster was like, you know, if they were doing really well and Ritter was awful and Heinicke, whatever, it would be Tannehill. Like, he knows the system. He'd slot right in. You can pretty much bank on him being like the 13th best quarterback in the league. And Ryan Tannehill could take this team to the playoffs tomorrow.
I think anyone can, honestly. Like, I don't think we're understanding. Like, I think
the predicament they want to put to the test, right? They want to see if Desmond Ritter, the best case, right? What is the best case for him? The 11th best quarterback in the league? 10th?
Yeah, somewhere around there, probably.
So, like,
12th. 12th or 13th.
I think Arthur Smith has this, like, quiet-ish arrogance about, like, man, it doesn't freaking matter. You know, I can build an offense around this guy's skill sets, anybody's skill sets, basically, and we're going to be really darn good, because also we have a total unicorn at tight end, one of the greatest running back prospects to come out in the last couple decades, and a really good wide receiver one, and a kick-ass offensive line. And that's kind of like, I think that's what he believes. And so he's saying, if anyone can do it, why don't I pay a third round pick to do it, who I think is good enough right for now. And then if something comes along later, we pounce at that. But I don't think it's like,
it's the Kyle Shanahan thing where it's like, I don't care if it's Jimmy Garoppolo, Brock Purdy, Trey Lance. I can win with anybody. I can get the Super Bowl with anybody.
Well,
right. And if anyone can do it, you know, why pay Ryan Tannehill $20 million? Why pay, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo $30 million when I could pay Desmond Ritter? Honestly, I have no idea what Desmond Ritter makes. A couple million?
Yeah, not a lot.
$5 million, probably. But it also depends on where we are in the timeline, or at least in Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith's mind. Like, what's their expectation this year? God, there's a blessing fly. There's just been this fly that's been hovering around my face this entire podcast. It's killing me.
Shout out to Breaking Bad, an underrated episode.
But the I lost my train of thought here. No, it just depends on where they expect the team to be right now. Like, I don't think my expectations for this team are like, maybe they're different from what Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot expect. One of the reasons they didn't go for a guy like Lamar Jackson, I think, is because this team wasn't in position to go win. Now, that also flies in the face of whatever they did with Deshaun Watson, which honestly just feels like just an anomaly more than anything at this point. But I mean, if they feel like, Max, in your situation where they're 5-5 and maybe they have position to make a move, and Desmond Ritter's been dreadful, then I think the guy's already on the roster for this season as Taylor Heinicke. They're going to go to him and he's going to figure it out. He has experience doing that and dragging a team to the playoffs with mediocre quarterback play. Like,
I think that's right. I also think, like, you asked where they are, and I think this is a really fascinating question, because they've basically all been admitted the last 2 years were like, we need this time to like reset everything. Like, we were screwed, and now we needed to like unscrew things so that we could start moving forward. This year is like, we are now moving forward.
Yes.
But I think if you asked them, you gave them truth serum and you said, you know, in your heart of hearts, like, what is this year? What is next year? What is the year after? Like, I think this is the beginning of moving forward. I think they can make the playoffs in this division, like, no question. I think they think in the next 2-3 years they could be a Super Bowl contender.
I think
the quarterback is part of that, right? You don't want to get the quarterback wrong. And if you don't think like this is the all or nothing year, and I don't think there's any scenario in which either of their job security is on the line this year, I think that they have said, we're going to get this right. And in the meantime, we're good enough to go to the playoffs this year and build off of that.
I think their job security is on the line. If it's like, I think 5-11 gets you fired, or 5-12. I think Arthur Smith can't do that. I think you have to hover. I think the minimum,
get there.
It's 7. I think 7 is the minimum. Would be my gut.
If they win 6 games, I don't think they're
6-11 is bad. That's an under, like, that's a bad,
bad, yeah, but
I think,
but
there's
it's
like a, there's a complete understanding of what happened the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No one is under any illusions that anyone has underperformed the last 2 years. Anyone's done a poor job. Like, it's very obvious what happened. So I think, like, first of all, dragging last year's team to 7 wins, and what was it, 7 the year before too? Mm-hmm. Like, that's pretty darn good coaching for one. And this is the beginning of the roster rebuild for the GM. So this is year one for all intents and purposes. And I think it would take something pretty dramatic to like cut that off.
We also can't discount the fact that the gradient jerseys are gone. And how many wins does that mean if we get three vintage Falcons uniforms? What does that mean for the season?
Well, it means you can count on three wins and then right? you sort of like build off of that, right?
I'm so excited for that. Like, it's so stupid how hyped I am when I see them, like when they're back out. Like, I don't care how the game goes. I'm just going to be just in a great mood all day. My wife's going to be like, what is wrong with you? And I'm just like, it's Falcons classic uniforms day.
But if you had to guess today, mm-hmm. Do you think the Falcons win this division?
Yes.
This year?
Yeah.
I would. Here's another take. They don't win the division, I would fire Arthur Smith.
Whoa.
Like, no questions asked. Whoa. He's out.
He's got it. No. So he's, I'd be, this they, division, the bottom would have to fall out this year. And like, they would have to look bad on the football field for him to be fired this year. I think if he goes to win seven games, I think I'd be very upset and disappointed. And next year we're giving him the ultimatum, figure it out. This is your season.
Like, I this think is that's it. Right.
If he comes out and he wins nine games and misses the playoffs by a year, are you firing him for that?
Yes.
No. Absolutely yeah, not.
This division has Baker Mayfield and his offense.
Arthur Blank has no history of acting like that.
John Gruden is installing the New Orleans Saints offense. We've got Bryce Young, who can't see over his offensive linemen to start Carolina camp.
It would be a black eye for Arthur Smith. But the way that this roster is constructed, it's finally looking like a team in his image.
Great. Kellen Moore can come in and coach that roster that's ready to go. Great.
This is bonkers. But
it's an offense that is completely.
We were talking about Arthur Smith in the same breath as Kyle Shanahan, and now you're like, Kellen Moore.
Yeah, just get a LaFleur. There's like 13 of them. Take him in.
Yes, get a LaFleur. We have a LaFleur.
Another LaFleur.
They are mirror images of each other. They were like best friends. They worked together. They all worked under Shanahan.
Yeah, give me another one.
Is it a hot take to say he's a better coach than LaFleur?
Which one? Are we talking about the Green Bay Packers?
Coach? Green Bay LaFleur.
I don't think we know yet.
Yeah. We'll know more this year with Jordan Love.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, because he had Aaron Rodgers and had a great season, and then that Aaron Rodgers and had a not so good season. So it's kind of hard to tell. And then Arthur Smith, I want to see what he can do this year. I think this is a huge year for him. This is the first year that I have had legitimate expectations for the Atlanta Falcons since 2018.
Well, I think that's the big thing, right? Like, you have legitimate expectations. This is an expectation year. When I look at this division, the reason I'm ruling with an iron fist here is I think this division is going to be dog shit. And if he doesn't break through this year, that means the way I look at it is like, if the Falcons don't win the division and end the playoff drought and just host their first playoff game in the new bins, that means something went very, very wrong with this offense. Maybe it's a lot of injuries. Maybe it's just Desmond Ridder sucks. Maybe Jake, I don't know. But there's something that has to go cataclysmically wrong for them not to beat Baker Mayfield, Derek Carr, and rookie Bryce Young for this division.
I don't think that's fair.
I think it's something would have to go really, really wrong. He's not wrong there. Like, something would have to go really wrong on this team for them not to win.
I
think they should be expected to win. I'm expecting them to win. I think the Panthers are going to be a good team. I think the Saints will be a good team. I think the Falcons will be a good team. They are absolutely one of the teams that is best positioned to separate themselves. I just believe in them more. I don't believe in a rookie quarterback, and then I just don't believe in the Saints really to finish the job under Allen. So
John Gruden is out here installing the Saints offense. Like, I have never been more – sell all your New Orleans Saints stock here. Like, what are we doing?
I'd have to own any to sell it.
So. Yeah, just sell it. Max, Falcon schedule insight. What do you think is the biggest stretch of games for this Falcon season? Where have you circled where you're like, we'll know exactly if this team where this team is based on this stretch?
I can tell you when I look it up. Here's the problem with the schedule. Like, it is a really weak schedule.
Yeah.
And even the potential pitfalls, I guess, like, they get Bryce Young week one. Like, they get the rookie quarterback in week one. They get Jordan Love week two. That's great, because if either of those guys are going to, you'd expect both of them to improve throughout the year to some extent. Lions Jags, I'm excited for back to back. Because I think that we can expect both of those teams to be really good, but then you get Texans, Commanders, Bucks, Titans, who should all be pretty god awful. I think that a game like the Jags will be a real litmus test. A game like the Lions should be a real litmus test, because as the Lions get all this freaking hype, like, show me where the Lions are that much better than the Falcons. Just because they won
their offensive line, I would say for sure.
Their offensive line is markedly better, and I'd much rather have Jared Goff this year. Great.
Yeah.
They don't have a Kyle Pitts type.
I mean, they might be missing double-digit guys from gambling policy violations by the time this season.
They
rolls
also
around.
Have one receiver, and their offense, they need more than one receiver. Mm-hmm. And
I don't think
Jahmyr Gibbs is like a Bijan Robinson equivalent, and their defense is also very thin if you go look at that roster. So, like, let's beat the piss out of the Lions, run the ball down their throat, and then sort of put our mark on, okay, like, this is real. And I also think, like, I think we're going to learn things in stages with this team. Mm. That Panthers week one game will be a real test for Desmond Ridder. Like, that Panthers defense, I don't think the offense is going to be very good yet, but I think that defense can be legit. I think that we're going to learn about the Packers defense, you know, also could be pretty good. We're just going to learn different things. And I think Garrett said it best. Like, I haven't been this excited for a Falcons season since since pre Super Bowl, probably. Cause like after the Super Bowl, I was just depressed for a few years.
I'll never forget being in the city for that. Like, that the next morning, I will never forget. It was cloudy. It was just like a nuclear bomb went off in Atlanta. That was one of the craziest days in Atlanta. I'll never forget it. Like that, and then the Ice Bowl for Titans Rams is for whatever reason stuck in my brain. I just remember that whole thing. Y'all are pretty young for that one. I don't even know. Like, I was
five.
Yeah. I was eight.
Too young.
Yeah.
So you're old enough to know what's going on.
Yeah, like I was memorizing Isaac Bruce stats at that age. So I was in the know.
Yeah, I missed class the whole next day. I was in college. Brutal day.
Yeah.
I literally skipped school. I did not go to class. And then I had my professors waved. I had like a pop quiz. And then I had my professor who had the pop quiz, he like called me up after class. He was like, "Don't worry, I waved it for you. Don't worry about that." It was a tough day on Sunday. I'm like, yeah, it was.
You're talking Super Bowl, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had friends just like pour in Venmos, just like pity Venmos to my account. Yeah, the next day it was very cold, very icy in Ann Arbor, and I felt like death.
Yeah. See, Georgia Southern, it's like most everyone's a Falcons fan already. Yeah. So it was just sort of like a really sad day. Why do we get on this topic? Why are we talking about this?
I don't know, Garrett.
It's part of our DNA as Falcons.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What's your pivot point for the Falcons season? Where are you going to like?
I'm looking at the bye week specifically because of where it stands. It's week 11. I love that. I love the way it sets up because you have a winnable stretch right after that. You have the Saints at home. Then you travel to New York. You got Tampa Bay at home, at Carolina, Colts, at the Bears, in a cold, icy game where there's going to be a lot of running. Which, I mean, by that point, I think the Falcons will know exactly who they are on offense and playing that with, well, I'd hope so by week.
It's going to be a sick cold weather team.
That's going to be a good cold weather team. But then they finish the season against New Orleans. Like, that is a make or break stretch right there. I think this team, the early part, I know, Max, you talked about it, it'll set the tone for the season and we'll know who they are by that bye week. But after that, I think that's where we're gonna figure out what kind of team, because the last 2 years they really folded down the stretch. Last year especially, they really kind of wilted. But I think that just had a lot to do with their depth. They didn't have anybody, and so they were basically playing practice squad guys or guys who should be on a practice squad as their depth players or starters in some cases. And I think if they can really, really establish the run down the stretch, they have the chance, especially looking at these teams, to punish some of them. And I think if they can pull out wins, like against the New York Jets, I think they can pull out a win against that team if they can punish them enough on offense. I think it's going to be a good game. But look, if they can finish the stretch strong and finish it maybe like four wins or something, I think this is a playoff team.
This is as weak a schedule as I've seen.
It's a bad schedule. In a like long objectively. Time.
But I'm okay with that. The Falcons need it. That's why another thing, like when you look at the schedule, this just looks like 10 wins at the worst to me. When I look at this,
I see 10 wins.
This is why I'm terrified, because I don't know if you guys are in the same way, but like me at the bar every week watching these Falcons games in my work done jersey and being the only Falcons fan here in Knoxville, it's a sad state of affairs most weeks. But I don't I haven't felt anything for the last 2 years because they're not playing for anything. Where sure. It's like, this is just, it's a fun way to spend 3 hours. Like, yeah, the Chargers game ripped my soul. But outside of that game, like, I mean, the Bills game too. I was pretty, pretty PO'd at the Bills game 2 years ago. That was, I still, Matt Ryan, the dirty head. Anyway, you haven't had a reason to like fully emotionally invest yourself again. And they've been kind of on the outskirts while the Hawks and the Braves have gotten our full emotional investment based on what they've been doing week over week. I'm excited and terrified to bring them back into my life as a, not that I haven't watching, just that like, oh, I have expectations again. Like, you should be hosting a playoff game. You should be winning, that you should be dominating some teams. Now we should start to look like an actual NFC contender, like flashes of it. I'm not saying you're the favorite, but we should be seeing flashes of like how they finally get there next year or the year after, where it's like, all right, it's completed. They're now a juggernaut and they should be realistic NFC Super Bowl contenders for the next couple of years. Like, that is where I'm at. And that's just kind of terrifying because we haven't been there in a while.
It's nerve-wracking.
I would say that I have been good at inventing reasons to be emotionally invested the last few years. And this year I don't have to invent anything. Yeah. And that's, if they played next Sunday, I'd be ready. And it is June 2nd. So we got to pace ourselves.
It'll be a long summer.
I mean, it's going to be a lot of winning this year. Tennessee, Joe Milton,
Michigan, Heisman, back-to-back Big Ten champions coming back with J.J. McCarthy. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
There's an outside chance that this season starts off really poorly, though.
I don't do this.
Like, I can see it. I can see it. Like, I'm optimistic. Trust me. I mean, I said that this team is going to be 10 wins. But, like, Vegas is rarely wrong, like, really wrong. Mm-hmm. They have us at 8.5. And the funny thing is, I had a buddy, so my co-host, he went on some BetQL thing or whatever, and they asked him, like, yeah, so the line for the Atlanta Falcons, 8.5, easy under, right? That's the national narrative. And, I mean, maybe they see something we don't, and maybe we have our red and black glasses on. But it's like, you look at this start, these are four teams that could be in the playoffs.
Mm.
So if you think about it that way, like, those are four really good teams, potentially.
We should also say, like,
the Jags were a couple plays away from like potentially playing in an AFC Championship game last year. I think this could be a good. This could be a good group. And then the Texans are terrible. But I mean,
I was talking down Bryce Young and Jordan Love. Like, past Falcons secondaries would get shredded by those guys week one and two. It'd be like, oh my god, this year's gonna be so much worse than I thought. And then suddenly you've got a Lions offense that's going to be really good and a Jags offense that's going to be really good. And Calvin Ridley goes for 150 yards and you want to die. And like, totally, I could see that.
I forgot about that. Like, Calvin Ridley is going to be his Players Tribune article. I'm all in on Calvin Ridley.
Totally.
Like, I just think a 2-2 record.
I would take a 2-2 record.
Yeah, I think that's
look
fine.
Look at the rest of the schedule. Like, if you go 2-2 and you don't win 10 games, like, that'd be pretty hard.
But 1-3.
No, I'm not taking 1-3. This team's gonna be good.
Yeah.
Okay. No. I'm just saying. Where do we draw the line? So it's like 1.5 wins.
1-3.
I think you're gonna be an underdog to the Lions in Detroit. I think that's going to happen. And you're gonna be an underdog to the Jags in London. I think it's in London.
Yeah, it's in London.
You're gonna be an underdog to the Jags in London. No matter what happens the first 2 weeks, both of those.
That Packers game's gonna be a pick 'em. I just know it.
Where is it in Atlanta?
Yeah.
I think we'll. Well, I don't know.
Maybe a point favorite or something.
Point and a half.
Yeah, we'll see. I think this. I mean, it's going to be a very busy offseason. I think this team is a lot better than the national media gives it credit for. But I think it all comes down to, if Desmond Ridder's above average, this team is going to be really good.
And I also think, like, not to belabor so much Falcons talk on June 2nd, but maybe I'm getting unnecessarily hyped for preseason. I think that's going to be really important for Ridder. like he didn't get that many reps. He got no in-game reps with Kyle Pitts last year, right? He's, you know, got a few reps with Drake London and the offensive line. He got four games. Bijan Robinson introduction, like all of those things, like I think those will be important reps for him as he sort of like builds on the confidence that he's been talking about so that he's ready to go, because those first two games are really important that you might be fit. You probably will be favored in. And yeah,
man, well, we'll see what happens. Either way, this is, it's nice to be optimistic about the Falcons again and have expectations. This might be a different take here. I want to do a should he stay or should he go series. And we're going to start with the in terms of the Atlanta Hawks and some of the big names here each week. I think this could be a fun offseason idea. Because I'm like swatting Clint Capela trade rumors like flies over here, where friend of the pod, Lauren Gunn, asked like what the value is for Hawks, asking Hawks Twitter, like what's Clint Capela's trade value? And I was like, well, it's the blessing of Trae Young. So very high. And because Trae Young has not looked at Clint Capela when finishing an alley-oop in 2.5 years. So the man, there's not anyone on this team that has more in on-court chemistry than Clint Capela and Trae Young. So I have my doubts that as long as Trae's here, that Capela is moving on. That all being said, speaking of Trae Young, I think we have to start here. Garrett, first question here involving Trae and should he stay or should he go this offseason? What do you think his trade value is around the league? Because the Lakers thing came up and we were all like, no, I don't, the Lakers have nothing to offer. Like, unless it's Anthony Davis, it's just you hang up the phone because there's just no reason to even engage. That being said, if you told me anything in terms of what Trae Young's trade value is at the moment, I would probably believe you because I have no earthly idea what it would look like right now around the league and with smart teams and how they value him. What do you think his trade value is at the moment?
I'm just going to say this. I think he's untradeable right now because the Hawks probably have a value for him. And it's likely something that no team is willing to pay right now. Is he worthy of that? Maybe, maybe not, but that's not the point. The point is, you've built and leveraged so much in Trae Young right now. He's not going anywhere. Like it would take somebody being like throwing like some desperation heave at him where they're like, yeah, this is the year we got to do this. Like LeBron James comes back and maybe LA does it, which I don't expect that to happen. But they don't have the assets to make it really entertain the idea. Because they're not giving up Anthony Davis. Like that's not something that they're going to send over because they would want to win a championship next year. And if Anthony Davis isn't there, then that hurts those chances, obviously. So it's not happening really. I give it like a 99.5% chance of him being on the Atlanta Hawks next year. Like it's just because, I mean, you're not going to offer him like 5 first round picks or something. 3 first round picks probably won't be enough to get it done. You know, I don't know.
What do you think, Max?
It's not happening. That's all. I don't know.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's not happening. I have strong, strong reason to believe the Lakers have no interest, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
That's not. Also, if they had interest, like I don't know, there's no deal there. I just don't. I don't see the urgency with it, and I don't think Quinn Snyder sees the urgency with it. Because I do think to like entertain this whole hypothetical question of like what's his value around the league, like that is fascinating because I do think he rehabilitated it a little bit in that Celtics series. A little bit of the Trae mystique was back, and I think under Quinn he could have a really nice year that reminds people like, hey, there's so much talk about what he can't do and what he isn't. Like he at his best he is one of the most dynamic offensive players in the league. Whether he's at his best enough and whether he lifts other people around him and whether he will ever play even slightly below average defense, like that's all very much in the air. But it's like the Russell Westbrook thing where it got to the point where I think it's Zach Lowe or someone who calls it the 90-10 guys, where like everyone spends so much time on the 10% that he can't do rather than the 90% that he can. And I just don't know what that team is right now that's desperate enough that wants that. Because if you trade for Trae Young, you trade for someone who's going to occupy 25-30% usage no matter what. Otherwise, what's the point in trading for him?
Yeah.
It's not a team like the Blazers, who everyone's sort of like they're floating the three pick.
Yeah.
It's not a team like the Boston, I don't think, for Jaylen Brown, which I think the Hawks would love.
I was going to say, would y'all do that? No hesitation. Jaylen for Trae?
No.
Really?
I think I would.
I would do it. No hesitation.
I think I would. But
I don't know. I don't think I would.
I don't think Boston would. Like, he just, I don't think they would either. He's not a Boston type of player. Like, and that's a team, like, that is the team that he would thrive on most, right? All those guys around him would guard. He can come in and be the lead guard. He can defer to Tatum when he should defer to Tatum because Tatum's way better. But it's hard, a player like that. You don't just trade a player like that and get full value, because it's hard to see him fitting into an already made contender.
I also wouldn't be surprised if there's one guy around the league who absolutely adores Trae Young and would love to have him in a playoff series, it's Kevin Durant. Like, Kevin Durant's definitely the guy around the league who's like, Hooper. Like, he's like, it's like the two different types of basketball fans, where it's like, that boy nice versus just the set, like on the bus. Like, I guarantee you, Trae Young is Kevin Durant is all in on the Trae Young experience.
It's funny.
Would you do Devin Booker for Trae Young?
100%, oh, a million years.
Absolutely.
Trae Young actually fits a lot better with Kevin
it's
Durant.
It's funny. Devin Booker's a way better player, though.
Yeah.
It's funny to think that, like, the Trae Young teams are the Kyrie Irving teams.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, Brooklyn might be the team that, if this ever happens, like, that is, they can sort of rebuild around him, throw him in New York. He's a Knicks.
Well, we're getting Mikal Bridges back in that trade.
Done. Yeah. Yes. Sign me up. That's why. And they have like a million wings. Like, that is the fit that, if this were ever were to come to pass, I would hope they're interested, because that's the package that intrigues me most. But that's a year from now. It's not now.
Yeah. In a perfect world, we end up with, I think this team is going to look a lot different next year. And if I think they need more wings, I really just, at the end of the, like you said, he needs them, because they need to hide him a little bit more on defense. I think his effort level improved significantly under Quinn Snyder. He's still not going to be like, he still wasn't a below average even defender, but he was less putrid, I guess, because
what about Houston for Jalen Green?
No,
I don't think so either.
I'm just going to say, like, they're not going to trade him. I'd be very surprised if they do it.
Trae Young and Capella for Gobert and Conley.
What are you on?
No, I'm not doing it. No, I think Quinn Snyder and Trae Young are going to get a year together. They absolutely are. I think Quinn Snyder wants to see what he can do. He's the best playmaker Quinn Snyder's ever had. So, I mean, he's probably the best, one of the best playmakers in the NBA. Like, just as far as all around offensive game is concerned. And like, he was on that, what is this podcast? Is it his podcast or somebody else's podcast? He was doing some podcast thing. And he's talking about how he's like, Quinn Snyder and him are working on him just, quote, jacking up more threes or whatever, which I don't know how I feel about necessarily, but
I would just like more to go in.
He's got somebody who could his shot. Because if Trae Young can get his shot up to 40%.
I mean, that'd be great. I would just take league average.
38%.
Yeah,
I'd take that too. I don't know if he'll ever be a 40% guy.
That ship has sailed. Maybe in his late stage, I could see like 35-year-old Trae Young, who comes in off the bench and is only spot up three guy, is averaging like.
I'm gonna be honest, I can't see 35-year-old Trae Young.
I can't either.
No?
Period. What is his role in the NBA if like he sort of loses? Yeah, whatever. I mean, he's 23, 24.
He's 24, Jarrett Jack. Based on what we saw with DeJounte Murray last year and Trae Young when they were on the floor together, how did he and DeJounte work? Did you see enough that lends you to believe Trae Young and DeJounte is a partnership that is worth exploring for another full year?
For another full year?
Like, the full year, you just go into this offseason that you're like, I think I saw enough based on them on the floor together this past year that we can run it back with those two.
I think I saw enough out of the team, period, with Quinn Snyder, that I want to see it again. the simmering thing here is like DeJounte Murray can't sign an extension. He's going to go to free agency.
Yes.
And if he wants to leave, he can leave for nothing, and that's a disaster, right? So I don't – there's no sense that he does want to leave, right? There's been nothing to that effect. But if they got the vibes that he might, you would have to consider trading him because – I mean, and that would be a nightmare because you'd get way less than you traded for him, but you can't – you can't let it get to free agency and then suddenly learn he doesn't really want to stay here and he's not going to sign the extension, nor should he. So that's almost a trickier thing than Trey. Like, you really have to feel that out. And if DeJounte was like, I'll resign here, but you got to trade Trey, then what happens?
Does he get an extension this summer?
I don't, DeJounte? Yeah. I don't think he, what the CBA rule is that he can't sign an extension more than X percent over his past deal because this isn't his second deal, right? He signed an extension in San Antonio. That's like whatever he makes now, 18 million, whatever it is. And it's the same rule as Jaylen Brown. Like, if you don't make all NBA, you can't. It's a different rule than Jaylen Brown. I don't freaking know.
NBA the CBA contracts are complicated.
The CBA is wild.
Needlessly wild.
All I know is that, like, it's not in DeJounte Murray's interest to sign an extension right now because he's going to make more if he goes to free agency. So that's just going to leave the Hawks in a really tricky spot.
Man. Garrett, what did you see Quinn do differently down the stretch here that leads you to be optimistic about how he'll use Trae Young going into next year?
It wasn't necessarily anything that I saw Quinn Snyder do. It's the way I saw Trey play under him. Like I said it five minutes ago, something like that. It was, you saw the increase of effort on defense. You saw the way that his demeanor, even in the huddle, all of it changed and elevated. Maybe it's just Trey in the honeymoon period. Maybe it's not, but I think Quinn's more of a player coach and he's more forward thinking and innovative than Nate McMillan was. Really, I mean, Nate, I don't know if anyone would ever put him with innovation in the same sentence, but I think Quinn Snyder is absolutely on that list of one of the better coaches in the NBA. And I think that he and Trae Young had a solid connection. And if they can build on that, then I think that's great. Because really, it's like if he has a relationship with Trae Young, it's half the battle, it seems like, because he sometimes lets his emotions get the best of him.
I will also say, as an aside, it's a really smart move that the Hawks fired Nate when they did and worked to hire Quinn as soon as possible, because if the Hawks' availability was open right now, they would be fifth on the totem pole at best, fourth.
Giving Monty Williams a max contract.
An obscene amount of money, by the way.
Dear God.
That can Detroit, get up to $100 million.
Detroit's just a coach away, you know? They're just a coach away.
And it's funny too when people talk about like it doesn't matter, who cares? It's not a part of the CBA. And I'm like, no. That means like he's not going to spend, like, that's still money he has to spend out of his pocket, and that will lend that owner to not invest more on the on-court. Or it's like, I'm still paying this guy.
They were the worst team in the NBA this year. Like, why do you think you need to pay a coach $13 million?
Yeah.
Anyway, but he's known for, I mean, we're
development, right? You can hire a younger and a cheaper development.
Yes,
guy.
There's no like. Love Monty Williams. Shout out to him for getting the bag. Like, it's not a Monty thing. It's just like, it reminds me of Mel Tucker to Michigan State, honestly.
Hell yeah. Let's get into that.
Right? Like, doesn't it, where Mel Tucker kept saying no to Michigan State when he was at Colorado, and they were like, okay, what about now?
I can do an hour on Mel Tucker in that contract if you want.
It's one of the worst in college football right now.
It's hilarious. It's absolutely hilarious. Every dollar is guaranteed only because, like, there was one article that was like, Mel Tucker might get hired at LSU, and they were like, oh my God.
Well, I think it was also because D'Antonio left and really late in the process where they were like,
they screwed them over. Their roster was barren.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Still want to
be. You seem happy about it.
I'm thrilled. Are you kidding me?
What's the name of that rivalry called?
There's no name.
Because it's not even a rivalry. You don't play late. Like, it's not really a lesser game.
You say it's not a rivalry.
Well,
like,
it's very much rivalry. They hate each
other. Anytime you say it's not a rivalry, there are like five message board threads on the MSU message board that go up like, how dare you?
I just don't think it is. Like, Michigan, Ohio State's the rivalry. I don't think it is. Yeah. I would even argue Michigan Penn State's a bigger rivalry.
No, it's not.
I'd say Michigan.
It's not. It's not.
Well, Michigan, I'm saying in terms of like history and like where they are in resources and like where they are in the tier status in the Big Ten.
Maybe on paper, I can tell you that like those fan bases hate each other more than than Michigan or Ohio
State. Penn State's also only been in the Big Ten for what, like 30 years?
Yeah.
40 years?
Yeah.
I believe you.
Also, James Franklin's a beta.
Wow. See, I'm a James Franklin guy. I think he's good.
He's a better coach than Mel Tucker, but he's mediocre. Yes.
Wow. Look at this guy. He goes to two back-to-back playoffs and is just like feeling himself in the Michigan Wolverines.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Blake Corum coming back.
This is the year. Last thing, we'll go. What would it mean for the direction of the franchise? Like, I think that there's two ways to think about this. And this is something I was thinking about this week. Like, if they were to trade Trey, would that signal, if they were to go down that road, do you think they would have to do a full reset? And that would signal that they're about to tear this whole thing back down and start over with this new administration? Or do you think they would try and trade Trey for equal value and not worry about the picks and stay a playoff team, get that gate revenue? I would be very curious to see which way they go, because I think any kind of trade, or even DeJounte, would signal where this franchise plans to go. I think that's an underrated part in the trade conversation. It's like, I don't actually know which direction they would choose to go. What do y'all think?
I think one thing we haven't talked about today, Travis Schlenk quietly to the Wizards.
Oh, yeah.
Sliding out the door, the guy who staked his entire tenure on the Trae Young trade, the Trae Young Luka trade, quietly slipped out the door. They're already in a phase of transition, right? And so the people in that building aren't the ones who invested it all in Trey. And I have no idea how they feel about Trey. But they're not going to go full rebuild. I don't think it would be. I mean, they just made that trade for DeJounte Murray, right? They just poured all those draft picks into DeJounte Murray. Those are coming due several years down the road. Like, there's pretty much no incentive to tank it out. I think it would be a move to give you more flexibility. I think they would get a young core piece and other assets. And I think that would give you flexibility to move around rather than pay Trey and DeJounte max money and trim costs around the edges. Because frankly, like, the more we talk about it, like, I don't know how they're going to afford to pay DeJounte Murray and Trae Young full max deals, keep DeAndre Hunter. They just extended Bogey for some reason.
And leave playoff Bogey alone. I will ride for Bogey.
If he's healthy in the playoffs, I'm cool with that. But you're not going to pay some insane luxury tax bill for a 7 seed every year.
Well, hold on. Wrestler has shown that he is willing to pay. Hold on.
Well, he's an idiot.
Hold on. Let me check my notes here. He has paid the tax zero times.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There's a reason Kevin Huerter is not on this basketball team.
Like, he's not paying the tax. There's no way.
Exactly. So something has to give there. And I do think eventually it leads to a trade. I just feel that. But, you know, it's also not crazy to think things really click this year and Quinn's a good coach. And, you know, the talent is there. And so, you know, if this is like a 2 seed next year, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibility. Like, I don't think that's some insane thing to think. The East is in flux. Then we're having a different conversation. But I don't think it is. Like, I think it's in the 6 through 8. And then you have to make really hard choices because you're not a contender. And you're not a bottom feeder. And you're in that middle where you got to figure something out.
They lived there for a long time, and I don't think that there's any interest in getting back there. It's one of the worst places to be in the NBA. Team that you can – like where the Knicks are right now. No one actually thinks that the Knicks are going to go win a championship with this roster that they have. The Nets are like that. Then no one thinks they're going to go win
a championship. Well, the Knicks are when they get Embiid, but that's beside the point.
Wouldn't be surprised. I feel like Philly is about to get just blown up. I just have a feeling – all of those expectations, all of that. And maybe they'll have a year without Doc Rivers and see what they can do with, was it Vogel, right?
No, Nick Nurse. I think
Nick
they upgraded.
Nurse. No, there's Nick Nurse.
Yeah.
Who I think is a great coach. So we'll see what happens with that. Vogel's like, I just got hired at the Suns.
Phoenix.
No, but if they end up trading Trae Young, it just means that Quinn Snyder didn't want Trae Young on this team. that's really all it comes down to. The relationship failed. And
because he has final say, right? Isn't that the
right
report
now, that Quinn? Yeah. I think Quinn Snyder, that was a pretty important part of the building the roster out, is probably a major like component.
You'd have to think they gave him serious concessions to come in.
They had to. They had to.
And take this on.
And it's like a kind of a below average job, if I'm being honest. Like, it's not. You saw evidence of like all of these other nicer jobs that came open, and Quinn's probably kicking himself a little bit right now. But, you know, he's got some pieces. I mean, the Hawks aren't in these dire straits where like they're not going to be a good basketball team next year. There's a good chance that they are a pretty solid team. But it's just, there's not a, like Max, you talked about, like, there's just not a lot of flexibility. Like, there's not, what moves can you make right now with that you're going to get better with as a result, you know, like maybe you find a diamond in the rough in the draft. I don't think you will necessarily at 16, but
that's part of the thing. If you found a diamond in the rough, like where are the minutes for him? And that's the thing with this roster is like, it's not a bad roster. It's almost, it's log jammed like with guys who are neutral assets at best. Right. And so I think a trade would like, it's not happening. We've said it a million times, would shake loose some of the like rigidity of the roster, because I think we all think AJ Griffin is going to be a really good player, right?
Well, yeah. Only one of us has been on that since the early part of the season.
I mean, no,
some you were on like, program is like
start
look,
immediately. And I was like,
Jalen Johnson should be the starting
he's
18. Four.
Yeah. Jalen Johnson has a great future.
Yeah.
But like AJ Griffin was getting DMPs at the end of last year.
Yeah.
And I don't think that was wrong. Like I wasn't like dying for him to get playoff minutes. I don't think he was ready, but like that development takes minutes, and
minutes and availability is not DeAndre Hunter's strong suit. So AJ will get plenty of opportunity next year.
Well, but it's also you look at a lot of the holes in this team. Like, I just don't think that they just need more. They need more shooting.
Yeah.
Like they need more shooting.
This is why I don't think John Collins is back. I think Quinn's not going to run it back
blue
with
in the face. It's just, we've been saying it for so long. I agree. He's probably on the chopping block. He should have been on the chopping block 2 years ago. And we talked about it a lot, and he just wasn't. And for whatever reason, is it the albatross of a contract? Is it the fact that they think that he can't produce at the high level anymore? Is it his finger? Is it, what is it? Like, eventually he's going to get traded. They're going to have to sell him for
it's going to be for him for Davis Bertans in Dallas. They're just going to get off the contract, and it's going to be Davis Reggie Bullock or something. I think he ends up in Dallas.
He ends up getting traded for a wing shooter, and I think that makes room for some more DeAndre Hunter at the four, which I think
I love that.
I think a Quinn Snyder-led team would like a lot.
And Sadiq Bey at the
and
three.
And Hunter and Sadiq and Jalen Johnson cover the four, and you get more flexibility with lineups. Because Collins couldn't play anything besides the four with this team, and you get more flexible there. But it's going to be a sell low on Collins, right? Like,
you have to.
Value has –
I think it's almost addition by subtraction. Like you said, it's literally just a logjam because he has to play. He needs the minutes, and he's too good not to give those minutes to him. And I think if you do trade him, it's you're expecting Jalen Johnson to take a major step forward and Sadiq Bey to be your everyday four. Which I'm fine with ultimately. I think at the end of the day, it's like Jalen Johnson's had plenty of time to develop and get better. And maybe in some crazy world, if Onyeka Okongwu is this dude who we're seeing, we said this last year, I'm less of a believer this year, but it's like, if he can develop a shot, what if he plays at the four?
I figured out what Jalen Johnson is going to be, by the way. Aaron Gordon.
That's fine.
Jalen Johnson is going to be Aaron Gordon.
Flashy athleticism.
I think watch Aaron Gordon in this finals. Like that is what Jalen Johnson's end product is. Which is
fine. Aaron Gordon's got like 50 pounds on him.
I don't
know. Aaron Gordon's gigantic.
Yeah, but he also put on a lot of weight.
Jalen Johnson's like 20 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, he put on a lot of weight. He was pretty, Aaron Gordon was pretty thin coming into the league.
He wasn't as scrawny as Jalen Johnson.
Like, there's a size difference. I think this is.
He was bigger than Jalen.
But Jalen can also Max put on going weight. Full like, super fan here. I don't even know what to make of this.
I'm going to
Jalen Johnson to Aaron Gordon comp.
I could see it. the boy.
I just don't know how he's going to play when you are not allowed to play him because
dude,
I said
you
so.
Are making things up. Aaron Gordon weighs 220 pounds. Jalen Johnson weighs 219 pounds.
Hold on, there's no way that's right.
Bigger. I think he's got the muscle mass. The muscle mass is like a little bit more pronounced. I think maybe it's
Aaron Gordon's upper half is bigger than Jalen Johnson's entire body. Like he's built like a tank.
He doesn't have 40 pounds on him. I can tell you that.
That man, I'm looking at a side by side right now. I don't know how that's physically possible.
Side by side photo of the two of them.
Huh?
He's got two photos.
I have two different tabs right now. I'm bouncing.
That would mean
the
that there's another comparison there. Yeah. Like somewhere else.
Yeah.
Camera angles, distortions, things of that nature. No.
Aaron Gordon's built like freaking tractor trailer over here. I don't know what we're talking about.
Jalen Johnson's 20 years old.
Yeah.
Give him some time. I think he could be a depth four. It'd be fine. I'll be fine with that. I think it just starts. I think once the moves start coming, they're going to start hitting fast. Give me some shooters, please, 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 please.
All right, we'll leave it there. Garrett Chapman, W Millennials, 99 the game. What can the good folks check out from you this week?
Back in studio on Sunday. I got the day off tomorrow. How crazy is that? Yeah.
What are you doing?
Taking a lady on a date, and then I got a buddy's birthday party. Surprise birthday party. So don't tell him. Don't tell him.
All right, I'll wait to post until after.
Wait to post, and then we're back in studio on Sunday. But lots of recruiting stuff happening over the course of the weekend, so that'll keep me busy.
There you go, Max. What do we plug with you? What do you do?
You don't have to plug anything, but I did go through Basketball Reference, and I can confirm that Aaron Gordon is 235 on Basketball Reference.
Thank you.
So
I said 240.
I'll concede a little bit, but the thought that Jalen Johnson can't put on 15 pounds in the next 7 years, no.
All right, I feel better because I'm like, there's no way they're the same size. I've looked at this man; that is not a 220-pound man. There is no.
You don't need to plug anything, but when tell fans that when we're watching the NBA Finals, we watch Aaron Gordon and we see the future in Jalen Johnson.
This is
future, baby.
I can't stand for any of this. Sadiq Bey all the time. Garrett Chapman, Max Markovich, thank you as always. Y'all have a great weekend, and I will talk to y'all next week.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.